Hey everybody, I'm Jamie Campbell, host of Blue Jays Central. You are listening to The Walk-Off with Scott and Adam.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's The Walk-Off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The diehard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one.
Good morning and welcome to The Walk-Off, everybody. I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by Adam Mack. How is your week, my man?
Yeah, it's been cold. We got about 7 inches of snow this week, so.
I literally was in Edmonton doing a corporate show there for Original Joe's and State and Main staff. And, of course, all that snow happened Monday. I get into town on Tuesday. Calgary's fine, and it is ridiculous on those Edmonton roads. I forgot what it was like, man. Oh. The amount of times I was behind the wheel, and I was thinking things like, am I in a lane? Right? Yeah. Like, am I even on a road? Because I can't tell right now.
Yeah, how far does this shoulder extend?
All right, we had a really cool week here on The Walk-Off, too. Number one, thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. We always appreciate your listenership. You can follow us on Twitter at Walk-Off Podcast, on Instagram, The Walk-Off Podcast. We're on TikTok, and you can also, of course, follow us here on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. We were so lucky to have two incredible guests this week. So our mailbag we do every single Tuesday. You guys are super interactive, I guess is the word I'm looking for here this week. It was great. So we do have that up right now, and we will be going over comments and stuff like that from our podcast that we are putting out right now here. We just finished getting with Jamie Campbell. I'm a little all over the place because I'm a little flustered. Yeah. Listen, Jamie Campbell of Sportsnet, like, it's probably the most tongue-tied. I was more nervous to talk to him than Pat Hankin. Like, it was just like, I've been watching him on television
every day
do the Jays. Yeah, for 20 years.
No,
so anyways, feel free to comment on this, and we will kind of get to that next Tuesday on the mailbag. We are going to throw to Jamie Campbell here right away. Before we do that, I did wish to bring up a gentleman that we talked to on Tuesday. We released his episode Wednesday, so it's out there right now, and you can find that in our conversation section of our YouTube page or on wherever you get your podcasts. Hagen Danner. Now, he was a Vancouver Canadian. He, of course, just transitioned from catcher to pitcher. He throws 100 miles an hour, and he was just recently added to the Blue Jays 40-man roster. And this kid is a hoot. What a fun guy to talk to, man. Oh, buddy, he's got a mustache that rivals Adam's. They're a part of a mustache pack now. But it was a really great interview. And if you didn't,
out the back.
It's just a great kid. And if you do have a chance to take a listen to it, I suggest you do so. He may not be a top prospect, but he's a guy that is on the 40-man roster and very likely will see him in the bullpen come 2022. So check that out. Did you have anything to add here, Adam? We're going to do the greatest hits next. What is it? The 24th we'll release that?
24th, Christmas Eve, greatest hits. Look at that. That sounds good to me.
And basically, we'll be going through all our interviews throughout the year and picking out some of our best stories with our interviewees. And we will present that to you.
If you have been part of this walk-off community for a while and you've seen a lot of our interviews over the course of the year, and there's a story or something that really stands out to you as enjoyable or noteworthy for whatever reason, and you think that maybe someone who's joined the community in the last month or two deserves to be included on, then let us know in the comments or send us a DM, you know, say, hey, that story with such and such talking about whatever. Let us know, and we'll look into it and add it for the new people here. So,
absolutely. Again, thank you to everybody who has given us a listen, clicked, and given us a view, has participated in the mailbag, left a comment, sent a DM, whatever it is. We do really appreciate this walk-off community we've built over the last 18 months. Very cool how much it's growing. And on that note, we will throw to the one and the only Jamie Campbell with Sportsnet. Enjoy, everybody. Cheers. So thrilled to be joined by today's guest, host of Blue Jays Central on Sportsnet and Toronto Blue Jays insider, Jamie Campbell. Welcome to the walk-off, man. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Great to be with you, Scott and Adam. I know we've been back and forth a little bit, but we finally found the time. This is great.
Absolutely. We're so excited to chat baseball with you, my man. And honestly, you are one of my favorite broadcasters out there. This is a little surreal chatting with you. I've been watching you for like 20 plus years. So really enjoy your work. And thanks again.
Really cool. My pleasure. I hear that from people that are younger than I am quite frequently. It's it's very satisfying.
How's your off season treating you? You seeing some family? What do you got on the go this winter?
Yeah, you know, as you two would know, you know, a baseball season is unlike that of a hockey or a basketball year, where you might have to broadcast a game and then there might be two or three days off and then there's another game to come. Whereas the relentlessness of baseball is such a grind. I told somebody the other day, now that I'm 54 years old, that I hit basically three walls during the baseball season. The first one comes around the middle of June after opening day and then this extended stretch. The second one comes in the middle of August when the heat is at its greatest temperatures and, you know, and then the team is either in it or out of it, depending.
Yeah.
And then the third wall hits me right in the middle of October around the championship series for both leagues. And, you know, I sometimes find myself napping during the day just to get through an entire baseball season. And I guess that comes with age, right? I mean, everybody tells me that as you get older, things get physically a little more demanding. So it's nice to have so much of this downtime during the winter and early spring, because it's necessary based on a full baseball schedule.
Needing to deal with three dog days of summer, like, just yeah.
Yeah, it is true.
So we're obviously going to talk some Blue Jays here, and we do have some listener questions for you. Before we do that, I did want to start with, to steal a baseball term here, what you do off the field when you're not broadcasting, especially the last few years. I've found so impressive and inspiring. You've really kind of given back to the community, if you will. I know that the pandemic hit and you were out delivering coffees to the frontline workers, and you were making phone calls to people who were down in the dumps and stuff, strangers you didn't know, which is very cool. Is this something that you've always kind of concentrated on in your career, or something new that you've kind of been putting your energy into?
I've always felt that to have a profession like mine, to be elevated to a certain level of public recognition comes with a responsibility. And people don't have to observe that responsibility. It's not a professional requirement. It's not in my contract details with Sportsnet to have to reach out in spare time and try and assist people in any way that I can. I have just felt, by sitting on a television set for so many years, that if there's a customer out there that I have been serving, or at least help serve over the last 25, 30 years, then in my estimation, one should not stop serving them just because the show ends, the game ends, the season ends. And especially when you have a platform like mine or Joe Siddle's or Buck Martinez or whoever might be a part of our Blue Jays broadcast, I have always felt that it's very important to try and impact people as positively as I can, well beyond the studio at the Rogers Center. So especially when COVID hit, I felt that there was going to be a great need for people who were isolated and lonely and scared and needed somebody to talk to. There was an obvious need for PPE, and I volunteered with a group called Conquer COVID-19 to help deliver that, you know, stopping in different places and small regional hospitals along the way to serve coffee to the frontline workers and that kind of thing. To me, that's just part of the responsibility of the job. But the best part for me is that I actually enjoy it immensely. And so it's easy for me to do. And I admire people who have certain platforms who reach out and say, okay, I'm stepping beyond the microphone and I want to assist people in any way that I can. It's not always easy to do, and it takes a bit of a commitment. But I've always believed that it is a critical component of having the platform that I have.
No, it was very cool to see, for sure. And definitely big tip of the hat to you for doing so, because not everyone has to do that, right? You kind of touched on that.
You got to understand that one of the gifts of working in baseball is that there's a very consistent Blue Jays fan base. Whether they're, you know, that fan base increases dramatically when they win, and when they don't win, it's very stable and very, very loyal. And those people are always going to be there, and they're always going to be relying on that ball game on their television every night or on their mobile device. And I recognize that those people are the people that essentially keep me employed. and they know that when they turn on their television, I almost become like a family member to them, and I want to treat them as such. And that's why the freedoms in the off season give me that chance to reach out. And it just so happened that, you know, the first time we encountered this pandemic, as you guys well remember, the season didn't start until the 24th of July, and we ended up playing 60 games. So I had what are normally baseball months with nothing to do. And that's why I just decided, let's get active here until they restart this season in some way. Let's get active and get out there and see what we could do to help people improve their lives.
Absolutely. So both Adam and I are stand-up comedians, and I know I was just in Saskatchewan this weekend as entertainment for some Christmas parties, right? I was actually in Moose Jaw on Thursday, and I met Corey Olofsson. He's the general manager of the Moose Jaw Miller Express men's baseball team, and of course the organizer for their big charity Kinsman Sports Banquet, which you personally have been involved in numerous times, which is a very cool aspect of your job. I was very curious when he was talking about all of the speakers that you have worked with. What are some of the best storytellers when it comes to professional athletes that you've run across? And have you done any of these banquets where something happened that still kind of stands out to you?
I've done lots of them. And I hope you enjoyed your time in Moose Jaw. It's a fascinating place. And Corey's a wonderful, wonderful man. Despite all we're going through right now, they're still going through with their fundraiser in February, which shocks me, but that's Saskatchewan, right? It's a little different there. I have managed to drag a lot of Blue Jay players to Moose Jaw in particular. There was one year that stood out, not by anything that that was said or done or generated a bunch of laughs. But it was funny, one year I convinced Devin Travis to come with me, and it just so happened that it was about the coldest month on record in the history of South Saskatchewan. And he and I got off the plane, and he'd never, ever seen, this is a guy from South Florida, he'd never seen snow. And as we're walking off this plane in Regina, to see his reaction to snow, something he'd never seen in his life. He'd heard about it. He'd seen it on TV. He'd never actually experienced it. It was absolutely amazing. So it is fun to take guys who are normally accustomed to warmer climes. Joe Biagini came with me one time, and he had the room in tears, as you may well imagine. I wish Joe had been able to foster a longer, more fruitful major league career, because his gift of the gab is extraordinary, and it would just enhance his profile as a major league baseball player if people knew how stupidly funny that guy is.
This is really crazy, Jamie, because I've got a great story to kind of add on to yours. So the year you were in Moose Jaw with Devin Travis, I was actually playing the comedy club in Regina, the Laugh Shop at the time. And my brother, just over my shoulder here, you see a picture of R.A. Dickey. So my brother came down when I was living in Toronto, and we went and saw R.A. Dickey, and he had one of his like midsummer, just incredible games, you know, when he like allows three hits over seven innings or whatever. So my brother got me this for my birthday, and I was flying to Regina and had to have it on as my carry-on. And I did the show, and I was flying out back to Toronto Sunday morning, 5 a.m. And I'm in line, and I've got this picture with me. And all of a sudden, there's a guy behind me who goes, "Hey, nice picture. I turn around and it's Devin Travis. And we just like, what?
Fantastic. Fantastic.
So I've got a picture with Devin and us holding up the RA Dickey.
That's great. Yeah. That's amazing. That would explain that.
We talked the same thing you just brought up. He was just like, what the hell is winter here? This is insane. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I took John Gibbons there one winter, about two or three winters ago.
Oh, he must have just been like the celebrity of the year there, eh? He's so folksy.
Oh, people loved him. You know, it was an eye-opener for me. One year we did an event in Saskatoon, and I went with Kevin Pillar and Chris Colabello, and this was the off-season after the Blue Jays had won the American League East in 2015. So their popularity was at reasonably high.
An all-time high, yes.
and what I didn't realize is that Kevin Pillar is a fascinating individual to speak to, but Chris Colabello has this edge. And when you get the two of them together, they bring out the very, very best in each other from a sense of humor. And boy, those two had the room on fire. It was amazing to watch.
Love it. So, obviously, incredibly disappointing ending to this season, needing as fans to helplessly watch as the Rays and Nationals refused to do any favors for this team. The players were devastated. Fans were devastated. And honestly, what was really surprising and moving to watch was Joe Siddall tear up at the end of that Jays broadcast. And it's weird that it had never really occurred to me. I mean, you all follow the team so closely, reporting on it all year long. It never occurred to me how upsetting something like that would be on your end. What was it like in the studio that last day of the season?
So that episode, after the game had been completed, after Boston had come back and defeated Washington and sort of sealed the Blue Jays' fate, because Tampa Bay had lost earlier in the day to New York. To see Joe get emotional like that rocked me, because I've never seen Joe emotional. Not one time. He's a wonderful man who has, you know, sadly experienced real personal tragedy. And yet he keeps this rosy demeanor about him constantly. He is beloved at Sportsnet for that. Certainly beloved by the people that get a chance to spend some time with him. And so to see that hit me hard. And what I got out of it, as I'm sure you did if you saw it, was that he felt a degree of perhaps empathy for all of these people who had invested so much in this late summer surge by the Blue Jays, coming so close to seeing them somewhat miraculously secure a playoff spot, and then at the last second have it taken away. You know, because there was a point there after New York held off Tampa Bay where there was a huge crowd at the Rogers Center. The Blue Jays were taking care of the Baltimore Orioles. I don't remember what the score was, but I know it was a massive lead. So people who were sitting in the seats were thinking, well, this game's over. The Blue Jays have done exactly what they need to do. Now we need some help from the Washington Nationals. So hundreds of them came around to our studio because we had that game on a big screen nearby. And to see Washington leading, I think, by three in the seventh inning, and then have the Red Sox just slowly come back and erode that lead and finally take the lead and win the ballgame was devastating. And I think what Joe realized was all of the heartbreak that surrounded that set, sat in the stands, watching on Sportsnet, at home, wherever you were, you had this vision of this team making it to the postseason just suddenly taken away from you at the last second. And I think he felt that for everybody that had invested themselves. And that's why he had the sort of emotional breakdown that he did.
I was wiping my tears away.
I was too. And I had to speak, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was really, you know, I was proud of him because it's hard to get emotional on on live television unless you feel something and you're not afraid to show it.
Yeah.
And I was really proud of him for feeling the way he did for the people that were as disappointed as we were. It's just that when we're sitting up there trying to make sense of what's happening, there is no time for getting too upset about it. You have to put it all in perspective. Whereas anybody sitting at home who lives and breathes the Blue Jays is allowed to be upset. And Joe showed that we're upset as you are. So I know you sort of prefaced it as being disappointing. I must freely admit, I felt that 91 victories and a wonderful, wonderful, you know, final month and a half that was so dramatic and so fulfilling wasn't disappointing at all. Yes, was it disappointing they didn't get to the wild card game? Absolutely. Would they probably have won wild card game? Maybe. Would they have done some damage if they got into the postseason? Absolutely. There's no reason why we could not imagine if the Blue Jays had just had a little bit of help on that final day that they couldn't have won it all. Mm-hmm. Given that, right, the team that did win it all had the worst record among the 10 teams that made the postseason.
Yeah.
Right? And had three fewer victories and two more losses than the Blue Jays did at the end of the year. It's mind-boggling.
The playoffs, so, man.
That's the playoffs. And I'm not against you know, giving more teams an opportunity to get into that tournament. Because let's be honest, those days of hey, you won the American League pennant, you're going straight to the World Series, those are long gone. Mm-hmm. Right? And we see it in sports like the National Hockey League where, you know, eight teams – what is it? I think it's 16 teams total get in. Anybody can have a good run and win a championship, and that's fine. It makes it interesting for a lot of people. I'm fine with an expanded postseason if it ever comes to that, beyond what we have already.
It's interesting. We were just talking Joe Siddle, and I know you've been working with him for five, maybe even more years now, and broadcasting's like anything, right? Where it takes a ton of time and effort and hard work to kind of get to the top of your game. And I'll be honest, man, like I feel like you and Joe's dynamic and chemistry this year was the best it has ever been. You guys really kind of hit your stride. Not that you weren't before, but it just felt like another level. Do you feel that when you're in the zone? Like, can you feel when you're really putting on a good broadcast and when you're really improving as the tandem?
I absolutely do, and I'll explain why. A host like me is only as good as the people who are sitting up there with him. And what I have noticed from Joe over the now, I think, 4 years where he and I have been analyzing the games from the studio setting is that I've never seen a guy who works as hard, cares as much, or watches a game with such such fine assessment. The way Joe watches a game is pitch to pitch. It's not inning to inning. It's not play to play. It is literally pitch to pitch. And it's interesting. Whenever there's a food run that needs to happen or someone's got to go get coffee quickly, it's always me. Because I know I can't mess with Joe's routine of needing to see every single pitch of every single inning. It's fascinating. And I saw him hit his absolute peak, and I think it might have been June when the Jays were scuffling a little bit, and I forget who they were playing, but Joe pointed out to me early on in a ball game that Danny Jansen, who was catching that day, was setting up on either side of the plate really, really early. Well before the pitcher went into his motion. And Joe said, hey, watch this. He's setting up so early that it's giving the opposing team time to notify the batter whether that pitch is inside or outside. And the next thing you know, and I wish I could remember who the opposition was, they just rapped out hit after hit after hit because they knew the location based on where the catcher was setting up. And what got to me about that analysis once he provided it in either the fourth or eighth inning was that within days, the problem had been corrected. It was noticeable. And I think what happened is somebody on social media made a big stink about it. Someone from the Blue Jays said, hey, yes, great point. must have, and I don't know this to be sure, must have gone to Danny Jansen and said, holy smokes, look how early you were setting up on the inside or outside of the plate. And the next time we saw Jansen start a game, you saw none of that. And to me, that's the impact a guy like Joe Siddle can have by paying rapt attention to the details of every ball game.
No, you're right. And I love Joe for just that. His baseball acumen is through the roof, and it's just so fun to listen to him do, just like you said, point out little things that seem obvious. And then when they're pointed out, I'm like, how did I not notice that?
You know, it's funny. Your name does not have to be Alex Rodriguez with multiple MVPs and multiple All-Star games, or, you know, any of these big name guys. Of course, they excelled at the game. I remember hearing that, you know, that Ted Williams wasn't the greatest manager in the world because it's impossible to explain brilliance to people that don't already have it. In fact, I talked to a guy who pitched for him when he was with the Washington Senators, and he said Williams was more valuable to the pitchers than he was to the hitters because he gave us a sense of what it takes to get good hitters out. And I look at Joe as a guy who spent such a long time in the game, very little of that time at the major league level, most of it at the minor league level, that he had to understand the game. He had to wake up every day knowing every aspect of how to play the game just in order to keep making his paycheck.
Yeah.
And so sometimes guys like that become these great analysts. Yeah, they don't have the all-star appearances and the, you know, the multi-million dollar contracts and the MVPs, but they've got a knowledge that has been built over time. And I think you're seeing that from Joe these days.
Yeah, no, he's really hit his stride. It's been fun to watch. I know we're on a time crunch here, so let's talk a little Blue Jays here before we get to listener questions. Where are you at on Teoscar Hernandez? Teoscar is a guy that I find, as he continues to age and progress, he reminds me more and more of another former Blue Jays superstar, right? Jose Bautista. Big arm, late bloomer, right? Slowly put it all together, and he has two more years on his contract before he's a free agent. Do you see Hernandez as a priority to this front office, or do you think it's possible, with everyone talking needing to re-up on Bo and Vlad, that he could be the odd man out?
I will say that I think whatever CBA is arrived at eventually will help determine where Teoscar Hernandez fits in the Blue Jays plans beyond 2 years, because this would be year two of his arbitration eligibility. Mm-hmm. And then free agency beckons into, and with, you know, now that Kevin Gausman is here for 5 years and Berríos is here for seven and Springer's got his long-term deal. And Vladdy's going to get ultra expensive. Who knows what he's going to get first year arbitration. Bo's going to get expensive. You hit on the fact that there are so many good players who are going to need to get paid eventually. And here's Teoscar, who has been consistently good, you know, still makes the odd mind-boggling gap in the outfield from time to time. But when he's locked in, he's as dangerous as anybody. I don't know if I'd put him in the class of Jose Bautista, but the numbers are certainly reflective of excellence in that regard. So to me, what the Blue Jays intend to do once the CBA is finalized, and goodness knows, I hope it's done, I don't know, late February, early March, so we don't miss much of a season. I mean, it's bad enough that the pandemic seems to be getting worse, and that might interrupt baseball as we know it. But it depends on what the ceiling's going to be, on what teams can spend without being penalized. And look, we know this. Rogers is a fruitful company with lots to spend on a baseball team if they decided to. And I guess I'm one of those people that thinks you can't necessarily have an all-star at every position. Mm-hmm. And entering 2022, you might not see a viable replacement for Marcus Semien either, because I don't know of a team that has every position filled by a legitimate all-star type player, as hard as the Texas Rangers are trying, it seems, these days.
Right.
So who knows? It's a great question. Let's review it in 2 years and see where we stand.
Okay, last question here before we do a couple of listener questions for you. Pete Walker has slowly become one of the most beloved figures within this organization. You've been around the game a long time. Can you think of a more beloved pitching coach by a fan base of any time in history than Walker with Toronto?
I know Mike Maddox was beloved in various places that he went to and was highly paid because of it. And, you know, there are pitching coaches. Brent Strom comes to mind with the Houston Astros, who's been there forever. But Pete has finally earned what I always thought he was capable of, and that is the respect league-wide. He has been a sort of a secret for the most part because he's here and north of the border, but the secret is out now. And I mean, I heard his name whispered as a potential New York Mets manager, for goodness sakes. And I thought, please don't take Pete away, because I mean, beyond what he's capable of doing with pitcher. Now let's be honest here. Not everybody has been impacted by, you know, the pitching whisperer. Right. He's helped a lot of people, and he was very helpful to someone like Robbie Ray, but that doesn't mean he's going to turn Trent Thornton into an all-star. You know, some guys are just not going to click. But Pete's earned the praise that he's getting these days, and maybe that will see him depart the organization at some point. I don't know. I hope they do whatever is necessary to retain him, because beyond what he can do for the pitchers, he's just a classy, wonderful, great conversationalist, and I would hate to lose him for that reason alone.
Do you get the sense that Pete Walker has managerial aspirations, or is he happy with the role he's in?
I've never asked him that, because the whole idea of him being a manager has never come up, at least in conversations that I've had with him, because he's been so focused on improving every single pitcher that walks out onto that mound for this team in some way, or having some kind of an impact. And goodness, the way pitching staffs are used these days, I was looking at the list of relievers used this past season by the Blue Jays, and that's never going to change. As long as the game is the way it is, teams are going to go through entire seasons using 30 some odd relief pitchers every single year. And Pete Walker needs to have some kind of say in the way each of these people perform. That's a massive responsibility. So sometimes I think managing would be easier. Honestly, in 2021 and beyond, I feel maybe managing would actually be easier than being a pitching coach in modern day professional baseball.
Wild. Honestly, Jamie, thank you so very much for all of your time. We really appreciate you taking time out of your day to chat some baseball with us. We'll throw to Adam here. I know we've got a couple listener questions before we get you on your way, and we'll go from there.
Great stuff, Scott.
Lots of listener questions, but we'll just pick out one or two here as we're running short on time. This one comes from D. Cooper on YouTube. Says, what's the most memorable sports moment you've witnessed or been a part of? And on a related note, where on that list would you rank catching David Ortiz home run ball in the 2004 All-Star game?
Oh, sports moments. Man, you're putting me on the spot. I
know that gold medal in Vancouver, that first Canadian,
you know what,
was pretty cool.
The joy that I derive from watching Mike Timlin flip the ball to Joe Carter in 1992, you got to understand, I was locked in on the Blue Jays from the moment they arrived in the city, and they were horrible for the first 3 years, and then they gradually got better, and then they became respectable around 1983, and then their hearts were broken in 1985, and so on and so on and so forth. And to see them win the World Series in 1992 just sent me in a different direction. So that moment in time is emblazoned in my mind. Non-baseball, I've seen wonderful things. I was around the first playoff hole when Mike Weir won the Masters. I was at the Indy 500 when a Canadian won in 1995. I saw my all-time sports idol with my own eyes, Gilles Villeneuve, in 1977 before he died tragically 5 years later. I've done Olympic games and been part of a broadcast for really, really special moments. I was in the building when Sydney scored the golden goals. So I don't think I can pick just one. And as far as catching David Ortiz's home run, the best part of that for me was not the actual catching of the baseball. It was walking down into the American League clubhouse after the game to give the ball back to Ortiz. And because he was a designated hitter, he had gone into the clubhouse during the game, watched the home run over again, just to assess the pitch or whatever he was doing, noticed a curly redheaded guy in a blue suit had caught the ball. So that when I walked into the American League clubhouse, looking around the room to give it to him, I hear this voice way off in the corner and he goes, "Hey," and it's Ortiz saying, "Hey, you, you're the guy that caught my baseball." And I said, "Yes." And I walked over to give it to him. And he goes, he says, "Wait a minute, you just giving it to me with, you don't want anything in return?" And I said, "Well, yeah. I mean, unless you want to flip me a jersey at some point." And I said, why do you think I need something in return? And he says, because Manny Ramirez, who was in the locker right next to him, had also hit a home run. And whoever caught it came down to the American League clubhouse and said, "I want 10 grand for the baseball." And Manny said, "I'm not giving you 10 grand for that baseball."
Yeah.
So Ortiz pretty well thought that whoever comes to me with my baseball is going to be expecting something in return. And here I was saying, "Yeah, take it. It means more to you than it does to me."
That's pretty cool.
So to his credit, that summer at Fenway Park, I ran into him on the field because I was calling the play-by-play back then. And he said, "Come down to the clubhouse after the game. I got something for you." And I went down to the clubhouse after they'd beaten the Blue Jays. And he pulled off the jersey that he was wearing that day and handed it to me, which was kind of a neat thing.
Pretty cool. Wow, what a cool story.
Very cool.
What an amazing experience. Yeah.
Kind of wish I had that ball back, though, all these years later.
All right, Jamie, thank you so very much for taking the time to chat with us. We really enjoyed this. All the best in the offseason.
Great to see you guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Osborne with a drive. Cheese and crackers. Shows to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.